We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
AM, the internet, and beyond. Keeping you informed every step of the way. Don't be left behind. You are listening to the Yo Andrew News Talk Show.
Hey everyone, this is Yo Andrew, and you are listening to an encore presentation of the Yo Andrew News Talk Show.
Every day she takes a morning bath, she wets her hair, wraps a towel around her as she's heading for the bedroom chair. It's just another day.
In just a minute, we're going to be speaking with Neil Lester, professor at Arizona State University. We're going to be speaking about the origins of the N-word, and we're going to be speaking about a course he introduced. It's called The N-Word and a Nominee Lesson. It's going to be really interesting to talk with him about this word. I hear it every day. I hear it on music, hear it with my friends. I get debates on it. You can take away the E and the R and put the A, and it's okay. I don't agree with it. And when I argue, when I debate, I don't have the right information, and you might not either. Or at least when you do use the word, you don't know the understanding of it. You might not know how it was used long, long time ago. And when you thought we lived in a society where we moved away from these words and away from these events, they just keep coming back. And we're not being informed on it. The N-word's always been something I enjoyed speaking about. I say the N-word not because I'm on the radio. I say it because I never use it. I don't like using it. Same thing with the S-word, or if you like to say the C-word. I don't like saying it. There's no reason to. I've had many friends who've had grandparents and ancestors who this word was used not for friendship and for shaking hands or for listening in your car ride to work. I promise you that. But I'm going to stop talking. I'm going to bring on our second guest of the night. He's the Associate Vice President for Humanities and Arts in the Office of Knowledge Enterprise Development. He received a PhD and Master's in English at Vanderbilt University, professor at Arizona State University since 1997, created the course at Arizona State University called The N-Word and a Nominee Lesson. His name is Neil Lester on my phone line. Professor Lester, thanks for coming on the program with us.
Hey, thanks for the invitation. You could have had many people invited, and I'm glad that I'm at least spending a little bit of time with you.
And I have to compliment you. I emailed you, and not even 5 minutes – there you were, already responding back. And I say to myself, you have the emails next to you.
Well, you know, when people reach out, especially on a topic that that I'm still exploring and I have something to say, then it's incumbent upon me to be responsive. So I appreciate the reach out. You called and I'm responding. So I'm always pleased to learn what I can from different conversations in different parts of the country. And so, yes, thank you for reaching out.
And I want to begin with you, Professor Lester, on the origins of the N-word. We speak about the N-word. We hear the N-word in music, on TV shows. Yet many of us don't know where it came from. So I really want to begin off asking, can you tell us, I know probably the N-word, there's so many different places this may have came from. So what do you know about the origin of the N-word?
Well, it's interesting because to my knowledge, there is no single source that talks about where this came from. What we have are various accounts of when this was first recorded. And we have everything that says this was recorded as early as the 1400s when Portuguese and Spanish encountered Africans and they used the word as a descriptor. We also have accounts that say that when the when Africans were brought to America, Europeans used that word to describe them as well, as a descriptor. So the negro, which was the Spanish meaning for black, was a descriptor. What we don't know is the fuzziness that occurred between the time it was used and the time that value judgment was attached to it. What we do know, however, is that clearly by the 18th century, that word was used very disparagingly. So the color brown, the color black, was not something that was neutral or devoid of value. So black bodies started to represent negativity, undesirability, unintelligibility, uncivilized. And so that sort of transition is the murkiness. And I think what's important about talking in terms of the history is that, yes, in fact, it started as a descriptor. But the descriptor then took on these values that were associated with black bodies.
Do we know the answer when the United States identified this word as a racial slur? I mean, it used to one time probably be just a, you know, status quo. You say this word to describe a color.
Well, actually, that's one that we can't answer because technically, you know, in the 1500s to 1400s, it was sort of synonymous with black person. And it was not until there was lots and lots of upset by the NAACP that the word in 2007 then took on a qualifier of usually offensive. So that's actually pretty recent in our lifetime. So it's not as if people were able to sort of mark that as offensive and then have it registered in dictionaries, which carry a certain kind of authority. But there had to be some way of saying that there was a qualifier that's attached to this, that this can't be synonymous with black person because it carried too much weight and too much baggage with it.
Now, even though it's now identified in a way a racial slur, mm-hmm. can we force people to not say this word, you know, with the whole First Amendment and a freedom of speech?
Right. Well, I like what you said in the introduction, is that you choose not to say it. And whenever I am doing public lectures, I start by saying that this is really about choice and the ways in which people choose to have what they say reflect what they think. And it's interesting to me that saying the word is not criminal. Criminality can often accompany the word, and historically, criminal activity did, in fact, accompany the word. But saying the word in and of itself, is there's nothing criminal about it. We're not going to lock you up because you say it. Now, what we may do is bring criminal charges of vandalism if you decide to, you know, key that into my car or scribble that onto my office door or attach a noose and that word, you know, in some other public place directed toward me. Then we move into this other space. But this is not the equivalent of standing in a crowded theater and yelling fire.
Right now we are speaking with Professor Neil Lester. He is at the Arizona State University. He created the course, The N-Word and Anatomy Lesson. And that's what I want to get into now, your course that
okay.
you founded, you created.
Sure.
Were there any obstacles, anyone questioning when you decided, I want to make a course all about the N-Word?
As I've said many times in various interview settings that fortunately, no. I was already a tenured professor and a full professor. And I think I brought to it, as a full professor, a certain kind of intellectual credibility. I knew that this would not just be about hip-hop. I also knew that it would not just be about whether or not people could say it. The impetus for the course came because I had noticed in 2000, around the time of the 2008 election, that a lot of references to Obama were connected with that word. And in fact, there was one moment in particular that fascinated me so much so that I wanted to figure out exactly what was there that I could move to understand better than, you know, white people can say it or black people can say it, white people can't. So I wanted to move beyond what I saw was the surface of that. And that was when a middle school teacher in Florida wrote that Obama's slogan about change, that actually stood for come help a N-word get elected. And I thought, wait a minute. If that can be written in a middle school, and nobody said it, but this is really about performance, and the ways in which people say it in these various performances. So if you're in your car and you're singing a Jay-Z tune or you're singing some other tune with that word, are you really saying it? And so it was that was what I wanted to tease out, not just sort of the surface stuff of who can say it and is there a double standard.
Well, I think a lot of people think they can say it, and I mentioned it in the intro, they change mm-hmm. how it's spelled. So they change the mm-hmm. word, they change
well, and
time.
And this is where I think a little bit of history could come in to be helpful. One of the things that I do in the course, it is not, and I say this all the time, the course is not a history of the word. It's a way in which the word has evolved. And so one of the ways that we look at history to say, you know, how do we measure progress, and is the past disconnected from the present? If we look back at minstrel songs of the 1800s, and those were the songs where white people, you know, blackened their faces, and entertained other white people by mocking black people. Spike Lee has that movie Bamboozle that looks at that tradition. In that case, it's black people blackening their own faces, but that's a different conversation. But the purpose of the minstrel songs was to entertain, but to do it by mocking black people. And one of the ways that black people were mocked had to do not only with what they look like, but also what they sounded like. And they had to sound like buffoons. They had to sound very unintelligent and, you know, not being very educated. And so one thing that was a staple in many of those songs was the N-word. And it was spelled exactly the way that people allege that if you change it from the ER, then it doesn't carry that same sort of vicious nature. Well, I'd ask people to go back to some of those songs, go back to some of those Disney tunes like Oh Susanna or Polly Wally Doodle or Jim Crack Corn, you know, those that have become children's favorites, Shoe Fly Don't Bother Me. Those are the tunes, that second verse, punctuated with the N-word, and it's spelled different ways. So to somehow imagine that you can change a spelling and you can even change a punctuation and therefore change its meaning does not quite work in this situation. What it does acknowledge is that there's something fundamentally wrong with that word, so much that you have to somehow doctor it up so that it gets away from its root. And my understanding is that that's maybe an illusion.
And I don't understand why you really need to use it for. Why do you need to go to these tales for? There is no.
Well, that's the million-dollar question, Andrew. That's the million-dollar question. If, you know, what I can't understand is why that word in particular has so much power over people so that they can't use another word. And often in conversations, I'll say, well, so it's used as a term of endearment. So what does it mean? I say, oh, it means homie or it means this. I'm saying, well, then why wouldn't you use that? And this notion that you can somehow take away a word that has hundreds of years of baggage in, say, 30 years of hip-hop really baffles me. Because even today, this word is still associated with attacks, intimidation, disparaging black bodies. And I don't know how this generation of some can somehow think that you can change all that. And also the sense that it's a double standard, I'm having problems with that too. If all black people said it, and the sense was that white people couldn't say it or non-black people couldn't say it, then I would sort of wonder. But I see the work of the NAACP over the years to get it out of the dictionary and then to bury it in a mock funeral, and it tells me, and I personally don't use the word, it's not part of my vocabulary. If I'm teaching a text where a word has to be said, I tend to bring in something else that can read that text. If we're listening to the last poets of the 1960s, for example, or if we're listening to some other text, then rather than saying it, and I will never say that I've never said it, I've never said it in a social context. I've never said it in a situation that wasn't disconnected from something we were talking about. But if given the choice, and we mostly are, then I'll euphemize it. And that's my choice. And I think when we start looking at the history, when we start tracing some of these things that preceded hip-hop, then many of us will understand that you cannot erase in 30 years all of the insult and, as one person put, all of the pain that's associated with this word just by changing the spelling and the pronunciation. And furthermore, part of the word's sound and meaning came from how it was pronounced in different parts of the world and different parts of the country. So Southerners may spell it one way, but it sounds exactly like, when they're pronouncing it, the word that's really disparaging. So all of these things about, you know, taking it back and reclaiming it and reappropriating it, I'm still looking for some proof that that actually happens.
Right now we are speaking with Professor Neil Lester. He is a professor at Arizona State University. He created the course, the N-word, the Anatomy Lesson. You know what just dawned on me? It's that, popular literature, Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, how the word is pronounced a lot in there, and a lot of parents say it should be banned. What's your take on that?
Well, you know, you can't ban history. And if, in fact, the literature is a reflection of the history, that's one thing. In fact, one of the very first pieces that I published on this subject had to do with the fact that it was being, the word was being whitewashed from some of the children's text, that, and one in particular that was actually about an episode in Brooklyn, New York in 1933, when two black siblings were beat up by a gang of white thugs, and not only were they spray painted white, but they were also baptized in that word. So a couple of years later, there was a teaching tolerance animated video that was done on that episode, and as they dramatized that, they used the word. A few years after that, a picture book was made, and I had studied the author of the picture book for my graduate work, and she has never been the one, Intozake Shange, has never been one who shies away from rawness, be it experience or language. And I noticed that in that picture book, the word, the N-word, instead of saying they were, you know, this was shouted at them, it was changed to mud people, which I had personally never heard. And it made me sort of look at a couple of things. One was, how was the incident treated in the media? So that led me to look at how newspaper accounts use the word or euphemize it or use those dashes so that you then fill in the blanks. Or they use something vague like a racial epithet, which could be anything because there's several racial epithets. So then it's sort of a guessing game. So in cases like that, it seemed to me that it was important to represent the experience authentically. If Huckleberry Finn, for example, you know, underwent that kind of insane exercise that one professor in the South went through, which was to change every N-word to slave, then that doesn't quite do justice to the history. Mark Twain was writing about a particular moment in history where the word was used more frequently in the context of the everyday. And these were not hip-hoppers in Huckleberry Finn. To somehow change that word means that you're changing history. And the thing about this word is that because it's allegedly the most toxic and the word that creates a sort of visceral response from people, I don't know that you can start changing the word like that. Our euphemizing it isn't changing it. It's recognizing that we have choice and we have some agency and that we don't want to say the word and we don't have to say the word. So, again, you know, I wouldn't, you know, I didn't support this notion of changing it in Huckleberry Finn. I don't know what that achieves. The word is not synonymous with slave. When people use it today, they're not using that in terms of a slave. So I think if people sort of, and that's the purpose of the course, if people sort of thought more and took the time to sort of delve a little bit, some of these things would make sense. And once I've told you, for example, or at least suggested, I'd hope you'd go and verify this, that those minstrel songs really have in those second verses that N-word, then you can't not know that. You can't not know it once it's out there.
Right now we are speaking with Neil Lester at Arizona State University. He created the course, the N-word, the Unanimity Lesson. We're also speaking about the origins of the N-word and how the N-word is now being used today. One last question I want to ask you, Professor Lester, is reaction from your students. You probably have those moments when you probably have a nice group discussion and people raising their hands and they're giving their point of views on the word. What were some experiences you saw from the students?
Okay. Well, you know, the one thing that is true about this course is that it is as intellectually challenging and rigorous as other courses. And because I teach at Arizona State University, contrary to what people believe, my class is not full of African Americans. And so in order to teach a course on such a subject, there has to be some sense of ground rules. So there are no personal attacks. And we don't use the word to address each other. We use a text as the focus of our discussion. What came out in some of those personal testimonials as we discussed different texts, as we read essays, as we read poems, as we discussed personal narratives written by others, as we watched videos, listened to music, one student said, self-identified as Puerto Rican, and said that his friends called him that word and that he never really liked it, but it was only after taking the course that he felt like he had, you know, the right to tell them to stop calling him that. And that was, of course, something I would never know about because he travels in circles that are certainly not my circles. So I guess what I heard were lots of accounts where students would come in and say, you know, people, first of all, asking me, why am I taking this class? And then I hear this word a lot in my own environment, and now I feel the class has given me some ammunition to address why we shouldn't be saying the word. Nobody should be saying it. And this whole sense that you're quoting Jay-Z or the BET rappers that Dr. Laura Schlesinger alleges presents all kinds of problematic ways of reading the world. All rappers don't use it, and even those non-black rappers who are engaged in hip-hop culture choose not to use it. And they know what the boundaries are. So the sense that there's a double standard, the sense that people are confused, really confuses me because it's not as complicated as people think it is.
And right now, there are some like me, Dr. Lester, who's trying to stop racial division, trying to create fairness. And we have Jay-Z, Nicki Minaj, and a lot of BET rappers creating this culture that's not true, that's very stereotypical. And if we try to say something, we end up being subjected to racism. And I think that's unfair.
Right. Well, and the problem though is that race is still very volatile, and people get really, really anxious, and there are lots of things that are happening that are residuals of the past that we can't slip out of. I think an acknowledgement of this, and you deal with your circle, because I, as an African American, would travel in circles that you would not. And so all we can do is sort of work in the circles that we inhabit. So there are people, you don't necessarily have to tell people, you know, who are African-American to stop using it, but you can talk to people who are in your circle and ask them why they use it and to challenge them, have them give you some evidence of how this is a term of endearment. And once they know a little bit about the history, once they've read some Richard Wright, for example, and once they've read some W.E.B. Du Bois and they talk about double consciousness where black people see themselves with contempt and pity through the eyes of white mainstream, then it's easier, I think, for me to see why some black people think that they can use the word and they can take it back. This is not a word like fat, F-A-T, which becomes P-H-A-T, or as Michael Jackson changed the word bad to good, because those are ideas and not people. This word is about a people, and it transcends place. It transcends time, it transcends gender, it transcends sexuality, it transcends social status. This is a word unlike any other word in the English language, and until we can tease away the various layers of meaning and understand that race is still something that matters in this country, I don't think we're ever going to get to that point.
Professor Neil Lester, Arizona State University, he founded the course The N-Word, A Anatomy Lesson. Dr. Lester, Professor Lester, where could my audience contact you for any questions, more information, maybe even if they, in the Arizona area, take your course? It sounds fantastic.
Well, people have been asking, you know, oh, is this going to be an online course? And I'm saying, no, it's not going to be an online course because this is really about conversation and discussion. And I want to make sure that I can see people as we're talking. This is not a lecture course. It's a discussion course. But people are welcome to email me. I'm very easy to find in the Arizona State University directory. But you can email me at asu.edu. and I'm happy to respond. I'd love to hear stories. I'd love to hear ways in which we can sort of make this more complicated than these simple binaries of who can say it and who can't.
Professor Neil Lester, thanks for coming on the program and such great information. I really feel now I have the right information when I'm speaking about
Yeah. Well, and you know, I've got stuff published. Some of that is online, but and some of the stuff is coming out. I actually have a couple of pieces that are actually on the course itself. How do you teach a course like this? So, you know, I'm happy to share resources, and I'm also happy to learn from others who bring stuff to the table. I don't think mine is the only voice that should be part of this conversation.
Sounds good. And we hope to have you on in the future because I've also see you study dreadlocks.
I study hair, yes. I have dreadlocks. I study the race and gender politics of hair. I also, one of the other topics that I've published on and taught on is countering heteronormativity in children's text. So looking at the ways in which sexuality does not necessarily equal sexual identity in children's text. So, yes, I try to go into these spaces that people don't often go into so that I can not just teach people but also learn myself.
Well, we do the same here, and we are definitely going to contact you in the future on those subjects. Dr. Lester, Professor Lester, have a great night, okay? Thanks again.
Thank you so much, and nice show.
Yep, thank you.
Okay.
Dr. Neil Lester. Professor Lester, however you want to represent him, has. You now understand the N-word, and we here on this program do too.
If you've been listening to the program for a long time, at the end of each program, we thank people. Because we know without them, this program could not be possible on a weekly basis. So even though Thanksgiving is upon us, always remember to thank those you love, because thanking is the best medicine out of all. We wish you a happy Thanksgiving.
Are you or is someone you love battling endometriosis? Fortunately, you don't have to fight this disease alone. Endometriosis is a painful condition that can cause excruciating pelvic pain and lead to infertility. Endo Warriors, a support organization for women with endometriosis, is here to help. The organization holds monthly support group meetings and events in Manhattan, Westchester, New York, Princeton, New Jersey, Lancaster, Pennsylvania, Denver, Colorado, and the Netherlands. They also offer online support, as well as relevant information and awareness campaigns via their Facebook page at facebook.com/EndoWarriorsSupport or on Twitter at EndoWarriors. Endo Warriors. Stand together. Fight together.
Tweeting is not a new trend. How about Tweet Yo Andrew on the air and off the air at Andrew Tweet Geo.
Sticking with a trend can be very hard, especially for your feet. You wear those Converse for all those years, and before you know it, your feet is bigger than the shoe itself. How about take care of your feet and get expert advice with our friend Dr. Howard Dinowitz, who owns a podiatry practice right here in the Brooklyn and Staten Island area. He treats foot and ankle deformities, sports and walking problems, diabetic feet, injuries and wounds, and many more. Don't be left behind. I want you to go and stop by my friend Dr. Howard Dinowitz if you're ever in the area, or give him a call at his Brooklyn location, 718-627-1212, or his Staten Island location, 718-720-4848. Don't wait. Your feet needs the care, and why not do it right now? And if you go right now, they might thank you for it. Wish to share your comments during this encore presentation of the O'Andrew News Talk Show? Tweet us at AndrewTweetGeo, facebook.com/YoAndrewNTS, email YoAndrew at YoAndrewNTS.com, and for all of your off-air access, www.YoAndrewNTS.com.
Into politics again. Anthony Weiner, who was once the a part of the district in Brooklyn, Queens, District 11, He sadly had to resign June of 2011 because of sexting. And I don't believe it was through text messages. It was through Twitter. We also got Elliot Spitzer. He was the former governor who resigned because of a prostitution scandal. Well, right now, they're both coming out at the same time. And they're not even asking for your forgiveness. They're just asking for your vote. That's what they're doing. And you probably heard of these two men. They've got the media attention they have adored, and it definitely will give them some help when it comes to getting your vote for the position they want to get into. And now, politicians always make mistakes. It's obvious. Politicians are not going to always say the right thing. They're not always going to agree with the right issue. I guess we can't put them at fault that way. It's part of the job description, right? That's what it's all about. Yes, you're going to be a politician, but we are aware that you might be subjected to your past, your personal life, people close to you might be sucked into what's called dirty politics. It happens. We know that. And again, we can argue on this. We can argue on politicians. We can do it all day long. And we are going to eventually ask you guys to call in. You can start calling in now, 347-426-3933. Should we forgive politicians for making simple mistakes? A mistake from agreeing with an issue all the way up to scandals. Scandals of sexual actions, scandal of money, scandals of taxes. There's so many scandals. We have a whole list here. We can go through it all. Yet I've been seeing a lot of you guys forgiving these politicians. 40, 50 years ago, if Anthony Weiner said I was mailing out pictures without my clothes on to strangers, if Elliot Spitzer said I was engaging myself with prostitutes on my own time instead of doing the position I was voted to, yeah, you wouldn't be seeing their face anymore. They would probably have to change their name and move to another country. Yet the morals in this country have changed. And that's what it all comes down to, the morals. What we see in one issue in society, how we see it. That's what morals are. How we look at an issue in society. And some of us believe, well, if you're a politician and you are being paid to do what is right for the American citizen in your state or in your country, and you are being distracted by sexting, prostitution, handling of loopholes, that's a problem. It's a very big problem. You see Elliot Spitzer right now, the last minute. He comes up out of nowhere and says, I'm running. I'm running for a position in New York State. Now, what's that? It's not governor. I promise you, Governor Cuomo is not leaving anytime soon in New York. He is running for controller. That's what he's running for. He's running for a position. And right now he needs a particular amount of votes to get it. He might not. What was amazing about Elliot Spitzer, he comes out of nowhere, announces this, and the guy gets interviews in seconds. Of course he does. He was already had a bad way of leaving 5 years ago. He had separated with his wife, three children, especially when you're the governor. It's amazing how you can say, I'm running for this position, and everyone just comes at you. We need an interview. I mean, yeah, he might not get the vote, but he at least got the publicity he needed. Everyone knows now that he needs these votes If he wants to be city controller, that's what he's running for. He needs the signatures to get onto the Democrat ballot, to get on to, into the primaries, to debate in September, and eventually you vote. Now, what he did, you know, a prostitution scandal. Anthony Weiner was the same thing, the sexting. Anthony Weiner, he's running for mayor. 6 weeks ago, he announced it. He announced it recently, like Spitzer did. Anthony Weiner did not enter last minute. He's already leading in many Democratic polls. Again, Anthony Weiner and Elliot Spitzer might be in the same situation just because of that scandal. If you look in their history of their experience before that, Anthony Weiner was a very good politician. He did many things. A lot of people who like Chuck Schumer, Anthony Weiner was the intern of Chuck Schumer in the early 90s. Now, again, when you also look at scandals, you might know them personally. If you remember Governor Patterson, I met him twice, very nice man. And when he was on the radio locally in New York, he was very informative and he was very good. I interned there. Very nice man, has some funny stories. Look what happened to him when he left office with his wife. If he ran back in politics, would you forgive him? It's all about the morals. That's how I'm going to end this conversation. It's all about morals. What your morals are, how you think we should live in society, and how we should treat these type of situations. Prostitutions, divorces, marriage, gays, all of that. How you look at it. When the governor of New Jersey a few years back had to resign because he said he was gay, he had to. Society wasn't comfortable with him being gay and running a state. Who, by the way, has the cheapest gas. Fun fact. So believe me, it really depends how you look at it. 10 years later, if he said, I'm gay, would we look at it? Maybe not, because the morals of how we think of that situation in society has changed. And that's what I think I'm going to see with Anthony Weiner and Elliot Spitzer. And it all comes down to, could they win? Could they win the whole dang thing? Could he be the city controller, and could Anthony Weiner be mayor? It might happen. And some people might be pissed, and some people might be, you know what? Anthony Weiner learned his lesson. I personally, Anthony Weiner's a good politician. Spitzer was the same. Do they have enough to bypass us? Maybe. We'll be having guests about these different elections in New York the next several months. We'll be having our big election night, especially we're in New York. We got a mayor, we got controller, we got other positions opening up, and of course many congressman positions around the country. 2014 is a big one now. It's all up to you. That's how I see it. If someone asks me, do you forgive them? Well, this is how I look at prostitution. So this is how I probably would look at Anthony Spitzer. This is how I look at sexting. I know for one, in the smallest jobs, if I did any of these, I would not be allowed back. And I don't believe they would accept me. But when you're a politician, you get a little bit of everything.
We here on the program sadly could not be here tonight. My crew, my family, 2 years, we wish you a happy Thanksgiving.
I tried everything. The weight pills, the gym subscriptions, monthly weight programs. Nothing worked for me and my body. Then a friend came up to me with a DVD. She said it's Leslie Sansone's Walk at Home program, an indoor walk at home program used in thousands of homes for over 25 years. The only thing I needed was a DVD player and a pair of walking shoes. So I put in the DVD and began walking. It was amazing how easy it was, and I had control over the workout. After doing her simple mile or 2 mile workout 3 times a week for just 30 minutes, minutes a day, I saw the weight being lost for the first time. And now I feel great because I walked away the pounds with Leslie. You can purchase many easy walking workouts by visiting walkathome.com or call toll free at 888-890-8805. That's 888-890-8805. Be a part of the walking movement by following Leslie on Twitter at Leslie Walks or Facebook.com/Leslie Sansone. Do what I did. Walk away the pounds with Leslie Sansone's Walk at Home program.
It's amazing how the world has changed in just several years, especially how we try to figure out who someone is. I know how it is. I'm a radio host, an entrepreneur, and my goal every day is to inform people, but also tell them a little bit about me. Before they go on this program, or before they even listen, the first place they want to go to is your website. And that's why we have www.yoandrewnts.com. We made it so simple to navigate and so easy to look at from your mobile device or from your laptop or tablet. You'll be able to hear who we are, read what we've done the past few years, and even listen to interviews, and you can download it right to your phone or computer and listen anytime you want. That's our gift to you. So what are you waiting for? www.yoandrewnts.com is active from about anywhere, and you're able to view, listen, and be a part of the program today.
Many ask what it is. Many ask, where is a cure? Sadly, it's not easy. Endometriosis is a non-fatal cancer-like disease affecting 176 million women around the world that need your help. That's why Knockout Endo, an organization seeking nonprofit status, is continuing to fundraise and raise awareness for women with endometriosis. Check out our website, www.knockoutendo.com, to learn what we're doing to defeat this disease every day. Being informed will help you understand why donating is so important. You can help by purchasing items from our website or funding more commercials like these. Don't sit down, but get up to knock out endometriosis.
Why should you listen to the Yo Andrew News Talk Show? The guests. We bring on the experts.
And has dedicated her professional efforts to advancing public service loan forgiveness, which allows recent graduates to dedicate their careers to the greater good. Her name is Heather Jarvis.
You know, people have a lot of different options, and the first thing to look at is what kind of student loans you have.
His area of expertise is international terrorism, counterterrorism, the Middle East, military affairs, and Ireland, Northern Ireland. His name is Dr. Joseph Skelly.
I do not see the re-implementation of the draft on the horizon in the near term or in the long term.
We have reporters.
She is staff editor for TV Guide, TVGuide.com. She is Robin Ross.
I absolutely was a child of the 90s, and I still sort of am. I still love all those shows that I grew up with.
He's a managing editor of Reason 24/7 at www.reason.com. His name is J.D. DeChile on my phone line again.
Big newspapers, you don't have to go through big media companies. You can get your word out there, and that really is the best thing about it. It's not all great, but it's fresh voices, and I think we should all be happy that we have the opportunity to put our word out and listen to what other people have to say.
Organizers that try to create a difference in our society.
Right now, she found the organization Stand Up, Stay Strong, Amanda Ray Davis.
And the gumption to stand up to these bullies and to stop all these suicides from happening.
Founder of the Hurricane Sandy Relief Program called SIFT is Christian Spears.
Tank top, almost like a white t-shirt, and just wrote with a permanent marker SIFT on it to symbolize that this is the volunteer group we were part of and that we can be a trusted group and that we're a bunch of local Staten Islanders from the community just looking to give a hand.
Listen to The Guest every Tuesday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time on www.yoandrewnts.com.
Taking a picture is easy, and we love to know where you are listening. Instagram us today at YoAndrewNTS. He always wanted to be a Rush Hour Renegade.
Hello, San Francisco. We're the Rush Hour Renegades. I'm Joey Gladstone. This is my partner, Jesse Katsopoulos. Say hi, Jess.
24 years later, he settles for Yo Andrew.
Rush Hour Renegades! Come on at ya!
Hey everyone, this is Yo Andrew, and you are listening to an encore presentation of the Yo Andrew News Talk Show. All over sports, baseball, hockey, just scrolling down here. All it is, the Ranger game's on, 50 Cent threw the worst pitch ever in a Met game. Oh boy. I'm just going down here. All right. So we are almost done with the program, actually. Another great month of May. A lot of great guests we spoke with and conversation we had, and couldn't thank anyone else but you guys. You guys are great out there. And if you're listening in your car, phone, tablet, laptop, desktop, mobile app, if you listen to us on the replay throughout the weekend, thank you. Really appreciate it. And I always end up the program with a sound clip of wisdom. It's a clip we played end of the program that gives you a message that you can take with you, and it also creates a conversation. This particular conversation, innovation and imagination. I want to speak to you about how you, if you have an idea, you can do it because you're special. Because you have a gift. And we need to have this conversation because we forgot in America. We forgot that we can create something great or take something and make it better. And that there are very few people out there who are trying to take it away from them because they believe that's not what they want. I'm not going to lie, there are times on this program where I sound like I'm forcing you to believe in something. And if I sound like that, I don't mean to be like that. I give you my opinion, and that's why I want you to call in. I want you to call in so you can tell me what you think, and we can have a conversation. I could agree with you or disagree with you, and how can eventually we can compromise and make a comment that works. That's what I want to see. And I hope that we can do that. I really hope we could. And the Sound Clip of Wisdom shows that. A few months ago, when we were speaking about the Lego movie, I told you how much I loved it. And the message they gave out. Many looked at it in a way where it was product placement. And of course it is. Of course it's product placement. Though it gave a message that no one really caught. Some did. Many others didn't. And we're going to show you that right now. How the Lego movie reminded us as Americans of who we are and what we can actually do. And it actually reminded us as humans. In this Sound Clip of Wisdom, you're going to have the main character, the construction man, who goes up to the villain and describes to him what he's doing wrong and why what he believes in is hurting what everyone is trying to do around him. And Will Ferrell, who does play a role in this, because he plays the voice of the villain, he also is speaking to his son, who was using his workplace as a toy land of Legos. Here it is, Sound Clip of Wisdom.
The power of the special.
That sounds dumb.
All right, here it comes. My secret weapon is this.
What is that? Is it super small? I don't see anything.
It's my hand. I want you to take it.
You want me to take your hand off?
No, I want you to join me. Look at all of these things that people built. You might see a mess.
Exactly. And a bunch of weird, dorky stuff that ruined my perfectly good stuff.
Okay. What I see are people inspired by each other and by you. People taking what you made and making something new out of it.
If the construction guy said something to President Business, what would he say?
You don't have to be the bad guy. You are the most talented, most interesting, and extraordinary person in the universe. And you are capable of amazing things because you are the special. And so am I. And so is everyone. The prophecy is made up, but it's also true. It's about all of us. Right now, it's about you. And you still can change everything. Careful. I have been told it might explode.
You don't have to be the bad guy. You are someone special. And I think everyone is in their own way. What this clip reminded us is that we're all special, and we all have a unique interest in ourselves that could contribute great things to society, and by doing that, we can see an economy booming, a powerhouse country, and a world of great things to come. What happened to that? Why are we all sitting around relying on someone else to do something that doesn't help you, but only helps them? Why can we say these words to someone who we feel is hurting and not choose to help? Throwing and not choosing to catch. And sit down and open up what you caught and really acknowledging the fact that we all have something that we could contribute to in society. I don't understand. We've seen it before. The iPhone. We've seen it before. The bicycle, the recorder, the flash drive, radio. We need to remind ourselves that we all are special. And I don't think enough people say that. Is this a clip that could cure mental illness? can cure those who are bullied, save the population from extinction? I think so. Because what it's doing is it's reminding us that we are human and we have a mind with full of possibilities, full of them. You know, someone once told me that I was special. And I think I am. There aren't many people I know that could build a radio studio and being able to air on many, many different stations to a wide range of audiences with different perspectives and opinions. Now, if there were more people like me who could remind themselves how special they truly are, believe me, you'll see a whole new way of living. Something that we've seen before, and we'll see again, hopefully, now and in the future. I want to thank my mom, my dad, and my brother. I love you. Thank you. I want to thank my crew, Howard Forrest, my phone screener, Mary Clifton Skalke, my producer, Moon Sun, my voice of personality, and my father spectating as always. Great job this month. See many more. I want to thank all my affiliates for allowing us to air live every Tuesday night and let us replay throughout the weekend for those who can't seem to catch the show as of right now. I understand. Time is tough. Time is tight. I want to thank all the guests that we've had. Great conversations on a variety of issues. Let's have more of those. Let's do that. And of course, I want to thank you. The audience, could you keep making this show go forward? You do. Not gonna lie. You're the cause of all this. You're the reason that this show keeps going on and on and on and on. And someone's got to do it. Someone's got to air the show. Someone's got to allow it to happen. Believe me. June, it's a long month. Let's hope to see great things. What am I going to do now? I'm going to check out how my car is doing. And I'm going to watch some sitcoms. Maybe eat a peanut butter and jelly. See you next week.
Yo Andrew News Talk Show. Every Tuesday night at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. More info how to listen from anywhere? www.yoandrewnts.com. Listen to all the interviews off the air at www.yoandrewnts.com/interviews.
If you've been listening to the program for a long time, at the end of each program, we thank people. Because we know without them, this program could not be possible on a weekly basis. So even though Thanksgiving is upon us, always remember to thank those you love. Because thanking is the best medicine out of all. We wish you a happy Thanksgiving.
Hi, I'm Dr. Pat. I'd like to share with you a recipe directly from my friends at Galeo's Cafe website. Try this barbecue lamb marinade in Galeo's miso marinade. Get your lamb shoulder cut into cubes and put into a deep dish. Add salt and pepper to taste, then fresh garlic. Yum! 3 tablespoons of olive oil and 6 tablespoons of Galeo's Miso sesame seed dressing marinade and leave overnight in the refrigerator. The Galeo's Miso dressing will bring out the best taste of the lamb and make it very, very tender. Then you can barbecue the next day. This recipe is directly from Chef Andre himself, so we know it's going to be delicious. For more information and to order your dressing today, visit galeoscafe.com. That's GALEOS Cafe.com or ask for the dressings at your local grocery store. Remember, shipping is free.
You got attitude?
Keys to the rescue. Adjust your attitude with Keys Clear Protein Waters. So refreshing. Just a few sips of Keys will give you a whole new outlook, thanks to 22 grams of the happiest protein on earth. Tongue-tingling tasty without the guilt of naughty or nasty ingredients. If that doesn't put a smile on your face, maybe you need to drink too. Put a little
woohoo
in your attitude with Keys Protein Water on Amazon or at Keys, K-E-E-S, please, .com.